Right, welcome. It's Friday afternoon. That means we're in the home stretch, and we're gonna wrap the week up with a bunch of interesting AWS news. Well, hopefully interesting.
Hopefully interesting. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, wow, that's really hard to do. I have a cat visiting us today, and we could do. I'm not a sports bettor, so is it over under on how
right?
What's the likelihood of him actually staying in that spot the whole time we're here? I wouldn't bet against it. So we might have to take a break when he decides he's had enough and wanders out of here. So we'll see how he does. I think he's pretty much out of it, so fingers crossed.
We're safe for now.
Yeah, safe for now. All right, well, I was trying to think of something like fun to start the show with. What could I start the show with? I have a Wi-Fi stove now.
Wow. How's that?
Yeah.
How's that going for
yeah,
you?
I can turn my stove on and off when I'm out of the house. That's pretty cool. It's probably cloud-based, right?
Almost certainly, yeah.
Yeah,
probably.
I would assume so. So that's interesting news. Other than the fact that it's crappy news because the other stove, the old stove, died, so yeah. I had to spend money, and now I have a really expensive Wi-Fi device in my house. But anyways, I don't have any other fun, interesting news to tell you. It's all I got. So I guess let's just jump in then.
I guess so, yeah.
All right, let's do it. Let me see if I'm fingers crossed that all of this works. I was telling you before we started that I was having some issues with the software today.
We had some technical difficulties.
So far, so good. Oh, you know what? After I told you that we had to make sure that we were unmuted when we changed screens, I didn't think about it, but I think we're good. I can see the little bars moving, so.
It's a good sign.
Hopefully we have audio. That's handy to have. All right. So, as usual, I've lined up a couple things here we could talk about, and I thought we would start with the ever popular Gartner reports. Love them or hate them. Lots of people talk about these things and use them well to just help them make decisions. So there's actually two Gartner reports, and there's one about sort of the cloud platform service providers, right? And then there was, I saw another one for, I think it's relational databases in cloud. And for some reason, I kind of forgot about the RDS one, or I shouldn't call it RDS, the relational databases in the cloud until I saw this. So there are two new ones, but you can see here, you can download the report, you can go read the whole thing if that's your thing. We'll see if we can zoom in here a little bit. Maybe, there we go. So there's the ever famous Magic Quadrant. AWS is still a leader, but you've got the big three that are always there, sort of grouped very closely together.
Top right.
Yeah.
Amazon, Google, and Microsoft. Yeah, makes sense.
Right.
And this is based on ability to execute and completeness of vision. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's actually kind of interesting. If I click on the, let's see if this will work. We'll read the Gartner report. And yeah, there's lots of stuff in here. Let's find Amazon. There we go. So they kind of give you strengths and cautions. I thought there was some interesting sort of tidbits in here as well. If you look on the strength side, and I don't think, this seems pretty obvious to me, the breadth and depth of infrastructure and platform services. Right. When I think about our customers, I know there's, we're going to talk about fancy stuff here in a minute, all the shiny new objects. But for the most part, in the Canadian market, maybe it's different somewhere else, but sort of infrastructure, platform, services are the thing that everybody is still using. Right. Let's be
honest.
It's true. So, yeah. And I think that this is not a surprise when we just look at sort of how our customers are using it. I thought the last sentence here is kind of interesting. Core AWS services typically influence the market by establishing standards and prices that other providers adopt. So they're kind of
it's
still leading everything, right?
They're kind of setting the bar, right?
Yeah.
They're the known, they're capable of executing on delivering at least these various services, and they just keep pumping them out, right? So,
yeah, that's exactly it. And you said raising the bar or setting the bar. I know that's also a phrase that they use quite often internally in AWS, or when, you know, as a partner or stuff, you know, we're going to raise the bar, which essentially means you gotta continuously improve what it is that you've already sort of delivered. How are you going to improve that next time? So just, you made me think of that. Hardware design innovations, Nitro systems, ARM-based processors. This kind of goes back to what we Graviton. Talked about last week, the Graviton stuff, right? So that's kind of interesting. Potential cost and efficiency advantages over providers who solely rely on third-party components. I would think, like, I remember years and years ago, it was probably one of the very first reInvents that I went to, and they introduced a new keynote. I think it was called Tuesday Night Live. And it was actually, Werner is usually the highlight for me at reInvent.
Right.
That keynote.
Yeah.
I would say the Tuesday Night Live stuff is a very close second. It tends to be, at least in my experience, it tends to be very technical. And I remember the very first time they did it, and I can see the person who did it. It's not the same person now. I can see him, but I can't remember their name. And they came out and they talked about sort of, what is AWS doing behind the curtains? They, you know, the sort of Wizard of Oz, they let you kind of peer behind it a little bit. And that was the first time, as far as I know, that they started talking about all the custom hardware that they were using.
Right. Yeah.
They weren't talking about chips at that point. They were talking about custom racks, custom networking,
data center
custom
equipment.
Storage.
Yep.
I would think that this is just going to continue.
I don't see why not, right? There's issues with supply chains right now, and there has been for the past few years, right, for some components. They're just going to keep investing in their own hardware to, I mean, that's how you, if you control your hardware pipeline, you can drive down your costs that way, right?
Yeah.
So it makes sense.
Yeah. And I would assume that's probably where they realize the price savings on things like Graviton, because they're in control
Absolutely.
Of that, so they can pass those savings on versus buying from a third-party vendor where that vendor is setting the prices, right?
So they could design chips to optimize for the workloads too, right? And power supply requirements and that kind of thing. So
yeah, very good. And then the last thing, strengths here, large, capable partner ecosystem, mature systems integrator, mature managed service providers. Yeah, again, I think it's just kind of sort of the standard that everybody gets measured against is this. More importantly, or more interesting, I think, is the cautions part. Lack of tools and guidance for multi-cloud scenarios.
Right. That's becoming more common. People are moving to multiple cloud providers to try and get the advantages from across all parties, right? So,
And I think that's really going to accelerate.
Yeah, I agree. And there's not great support for that that I've seen.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's like we were talking just before we came on here, right, about a customer who's running a small part at this point. Well, it's actually maybe not as small as we might know, but they're moving some components or creating new components in Azure that are talking back to what's in AWS. We've got other customers that are using Azure DevOps that's talking in to AWS. They're picking point solutions that make sense for them, and then they need to be able to operate between those different providers. So I thought that was an interesting point. I don't know about the second point. Overemphasis, there we go, on lift and shift. So lift and shift, just if we're not sure, means you just pick up what you have now and you dump it onto your cloud provider. In this case, AWS. And, you know, basically what they're saying in this paragraph is that AWS focuses too highly on lift and shift, and therefore if the customers are able to get running quickly, but the possibility or the potential of them modernizing that application later on in order to really leverage the true benefits of cloud, you know, cloud first products and stuff like that, or whatever we want to call them, is lacking in because of this overemphasis on a lift and shift. What do you think about that?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I can kind of see it. Like, if you just want to get a customer into the cloud quickly and replicate exactly what they're doing, then you're just going to drag and drop basically, right? Do the simplest upload that you can and then get them, just to get them in. But you really should be thinking about how can you leverage what's in the cloud to, you know, minimize costs, maximize the utilization of your resources in the best way you can. I guess it's just a priorities thing.
It might be. I I still talk a lot about lift and shift with customers because I think it's the easiest way to get going. However, right, you do have to, you can't overlook the benefits of running sort of in a cloud first approach. Like how do you get rid of an operating system if you possibly can? I guess the other thing that I sort of catches me on this one, and it goes back to what we talked about in the first part here, is a lot of the customers, and maybe it's just the types of customers we're dealing with, the level of their maturity and stuff, a lot of them are running off the shelf software. Like they're, speaking of vendors again, right? They're reliant on that vendor, but they've made the decision that they don't want that piece of software running on a physical piece of hardware in their data center or something. So in those sort of situations, you're not going to suddenly say, you know, oh, vendor, you're going to have to redo all of this. You're going to be reliant on that vendor. They're going to decide whether they want to do that or not. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of IT departments aren't even in the cloud at all still to this day, right? Like, it's only maybe like the top 10% of AWS customers who are fully optimized, fully in there, with a well-structured environment. So, you know,
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, there's so many people using AWS who have just essentially replicated their servers as EC2 instances, and then that's their cloud approach, right? Yeah. Which is not necessarily the best way to do it.
Yeah. I've tried to modernize my Minecraft server time and time again, but it's still running on EC2 instances. It's running on a Graviton processor now, though.
Hey, there you go.
There you go. I'm optimizing for cost, right? You made me think of something like, again, borrow from AWS. It's still day one.
Yeah.
Right? Like it is so early days still that. And when I teach AWS classes, I get so many questions from students, right? They're like, well, how do I choose? Like, how do I pick one thing over the other? And it's a balancing act. You've got to find the thing that makes sense for you, because I think the other thing that's sort of overlooked in this statement is lift and shift is one thing, okay? But to ask a customer to modernize that application, that product or that project becomes much more complicated, or potentially much more complicated.
It could spiral.
You have the skills to do that, right? Successfully. Right. I like the let's get it running in AWS, but make sure that we have commitments and plans to say over time, we're going to start looking at each of these individual pieces and figure out how do we move them from an infrastructure service to a platform service to a serverless offering at some point, right? And come up with that plan. So,
yeah.
And then the last one here, potential competition with partners.
Right. It
makes me smile. I can see this, right? And I've been going to reInvent for a long time, and we always would only half joke that when you're sitting in the keynotes, there are people that are in that keynote with you that have just watched their business go away, right? Because AWS has decided that they're going to go and offer that as a service or run it as a managed offering or something. So I just thought here, you know, AWS offers many managed services for popular open source packages, migration tools, blah, 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 blah. And they are competing against the partner ecosystem that they are well known for, right? And sort of set that bar, but they're also competing against those partners. I don't think this is unique to AWS though.
No, this is common amongst all of the big providers.
I read a really great book, and I wish I could remember what that book was. But the gist of the book is, and again, not picking on anybody in particular here, the idea of the book, though, is as these platforms first come out, they need the ecosystem of people that are excited about it to help them go out and build it. And then
need builders.
They need those early adopters, right? And then as they grow, they are less likely or more inclined to say, why don't we just do this ourselves? And I think this is just the evolution of the market in general, whether it's cloud services or something else. So I think this would maybe be a caution with all the providers, I would think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the Gartner report. Well worth a read. Whether you believe it or not, I think it could lead to some interesting conversations within your organization, you know, to decide what you want to do.
Yeah, there's some worthwhile analysis in here for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
To take a look at.
Some opportunities for some learning, right? This one, I don't know if you saw this. This was all over my social feeds this week. On LinkedIn, it was being shared by multiple people. On Twitter, it's being shared on multiple people. I think BT is British Telecom. I should know that before I talk about the article, but let's just call it BT. Advances AI enhanced product development with Code Whisperer. And we've got some really interesting stats here. Look at this. More than 100,000 lines of code. Let me see if I can get this to fit here. Hold on. I don't know what's going on with my Zoom. There we go. Over 100,000 lines of code generated by Code Whisperer in the first 4 months, automating around 12% of the, I love the wording, tedious, repetitive, and time-consuming tasks. Cloud marketing 101. 15 to 20 suggestions of code per software engineer using the tool per day with an acceptance rate of, let's say, 40%. Blah, 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 blah. I think this is definitely, well, again, I don't care if it's Code Whisperer or some other programming provider, companion. Yeah. This sums up the benefits of all of them. I think you're going to pick tool that makes the most sense for you.
Right? Yeah, I mean, it doesn't surprise me too much. You're going to use it to finish to write all those boilerplate lines of code that you're trying to write, right? And yeah, it seems like that's pretty much what it's being used for here.
Yeah, I like the metrics. I like the fact that they were able to go and say, like, how many lines of code did Code Whisperer generate? How many of those suggestions were accepted? I poked around sort of in preparation for this, obviously, right? There's two of us. I poked around in our little Code Whisperer environment to see that they actually published some decent metrics into CloudWatch as CloudWatch metrics. And I was trying to see if I could find in there, like, how many suggestions, how many lines of code. I'm sure it's there, but I literally kind of went into the console, went click, 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 and then got distracted with something else. And before I knew it, it was 2 o'clock. So here we are. I think the metric data here is interesting, that you could use this to maybe justify coding companions in general, like whether it's Copilot, whether it's Code Whisperer, whether it's the next thing that comes out, right?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. It's got like just under a 40% acceptance rate for the suggestion. So you might have to do a little, you have to try a couple times to get what you need. But yeah, it does speed things up, that's for sure.
Now, you use Copilot mostly, don't you?
I know mostly Copilot, yeah.
Okay, so I don't use Copilot. I'm exclusively using Code Whisperer. Not because I'm that much of a fanboy. It's just, for me, it's just easy because I don't have to set up my GitHub stuff. I've already got it all set up in PyCharm. It's just, and I think we talked about this as a group earlier in the week, right? Like, just, I think what wins, or maybe we talked about this last week, what wins in the end for most customers is what's going to be the easiest thing to use that is providing you with adequate performance. So for me, it's Code Whisperer. Why did I bring that up? Old man brain.
Whisperer versus Pilot.
Yeah, it was more like, oh yeah, I remember now. Like in Code Whisperer, when it dumps out a chunk of code for me, I get like, there's the code, but then I can flip through. I can tab through. Usually it gives me like 2-3 different suggestions.
Couple
Does
suggestions.
Copilot do that too? Does it give you a bunch of different options? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you can generate a couple of suggestions, right, and go through them.
So that's table stakes at this point.
Yeah, that's par for the course for these things.
If your programming companion doesn't do that,
right? Yeah. Is it really? Yeah,
is it really? Yeah. You know, I can tell you, I'll leave the rest of my Code Whisperer thing, but if this is a really interesting article, and I think it's well worth the read again, if you're looking at how to improve your code writing. Right, just having that companion there that's smarter than you.
I would be we'll see. Right, I would be interested to see.
Smarter than you, maybe not, but
it sure is good at remembering how the standard code should look. Right,
Well, we talked about this earlier too, right? Trust but verify kind of thing is what you have to do with this. It doesn't mean that, you know, I'm writing Python code for Q. It doesn't mean that I like, I need to know Python still. I need to be able to understand that. But now I don't necessarily have to go off to another website or documentation to find it. It can give me enough context and I can say, oh yeah, of course that's it. But that little part doesn't look right. So let's just check it. Right. So
yeah.
I find it just from a productivity perspective, just not having to continuously switch context. Like I'm in my IDE. It's spitting stuff out at me. I'm not having to open up a tab in my web browser and go Google some stuff.
Yep, that's huge.
Yeah.
I love that as well.
Yeah.
I'm just curious to see what the code quality metrics look like over time. But I guess we'll find out over the next year.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. It'd be interesting to see which of the providers this is the first one to provide us with metrics about, like,
right.
How many times did somebody use a piece of code that didn't work? Maybe they can't even tell that. I don't know how you would. That would be more anecdotal, I think, right? Like, the developers would have to say, I took five of your suggestions and three of them worked and these two didn't.
Yeah.
Right?
You could maybe check to track that. I mean, GitHub could probably do it if you're in a repo that they own. So you could probably run some analysis against that, or if you're using Amazon's equivalent. But
do you mean like I guess we'll see how that, or something like that?
Code commit or code pipeline, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool. So that's that one. Well worth the read again. And then this kind of, I found this and it just lined up well with the BT article there. Prompt engineering. I actually, this week I've been spending some time at, I will not remember what the acronym is, but let's just call it the Virtual Summit for Amazon Trainers this week.
Okay.
It's called TIPS or something. And I was amazed, quite sure if I was sold on this or not, but I was amazed at how many times they mentioned prompt engineering, Gen AI. And I think this is just me not quite having my head wrapped around it. I couldn't quite make the leap from how is this continuous conversation about Gen AI and prompt engineering making me a better trainer? I couldn't make that connection. I think what they were maybe doing was preparing all of the trainers for the fact that this is going to be a huge thing that you are going to either have to be able to talk intelligently about, or you know, your students are going to start asking you about it. You're going to have to train for it. But that made me think of this article, Best Practices for Prompt Engineering. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago, right? This theme now, right? I don't think there's anything in here that is groundbreaking. Like when I looked at sort of the best practices when it comes to prompt engineering with Code Whisperer, keep it specific, keep it concise, add additional context. This is very similar to the article that you shared a couple weeks back, right?
Pretty much. Go ahead. I was going to say there's universal considerations when you're dealing with a large language model like this, right? So
Yeah, I still don't think you're going to make $300K a year just being a prompt engineer. But you know what? I'm wrong more than I'm right. So you never know. But this is definitely going to be a skill. I see it even just in the work that I'm doing in Code Whisperer. Like keeping this, if you write that sort of comment, keeping this, like thinking about what it is you're actually, wanting it to give you a suggestion to the point up here, keeping it concise, right? Specific. If I just say something, like I don't know how to articulate the problem I'm trying to solve myself, then how do I expect Code Whisperer or anything else? It's not going to read your mind. So you've got to be able to articulate what you're trying to do.
Yeah, it's going to generate its best guess at what you're asking for. And it only has what you give it to work with, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. So this one, like I said, nothing too groundbreaking in here. One of the things that I noticed, and actually I'll save it because I want to talk about the Q business stuff.
Oh, okay.
I'll save it for when we get to that. So good article here. I loved this one. Did you hear about this story?
I'm going to guess this is the Air Canada one, right?
This is the Air Canada one. Oh, sorry. Yeah, okay. You can't see. I almost
I can't
forget.
Quite
You're
see
not
it
watching
in real time.
The same thing. Yes, this is the Air Canada bot that gave bad advice about, it was a person flying last minute for bereavement. And the bot, and again, you know, trust but verify. My understanding is the bot told them something. The customer went ahead, bought their tickets, and then tried to go back to Air Canada after they flew and said, could I get the discount because I flew for bereavement? And it was Air Canada said, the no, you can't policy. Do that after the fact.
Yep. They give you 10 days, and the bot said 90.
Yeah, was that what it was?
Yeah.
Okay, okay. The thing that I thought was really interesting here is, and this will be the interesting part to see how it plays out. Air Canada basically said, we're not responsible for what the chatbot says.
Yeah.
And I think this was in BC. Yeah, it says here in the person was in BC. And the Civil Resolution Tribunal, it's a mouthful, did not agree and said, no, this is an extension of your organization and you are responsible for what it says. I think this is probably going to happen a lot, I would think.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's worth it. It's a 2-minute video. It's worth a look. And I think it's also, you know, we're talking about the Gartner stuff and how it can trigger conversations. I think the other thing is it's one thing to have a chatbot, but if that chatbot is going to pass along information to do with pricing or something like that, there's probably, I had this conversation last night, there's probably a point where that chatbot should say, I probably need a person involved in this conversation to give you that level of protection. Because you would hope that the human understands the policies and the chatbot, like we talk about a lot here, may hallucinate a little bit and interpret things that in different ways.
Yeah. It's true. And it's so dangerous to allow someone, just any, like a human being, access to one of these chatbots that just speaks for your organization and just have it exposed to the internet. It's like there was that huge story last year about the Chevy dealership. Do you remember that one?
I don't.
What happened was they had set up ChatGPT, just basically reskinned it as the Chevy dealership, but it was full ChatGPT access. You could log in and get it to generate Python code for you, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it had no guardrails on it. And someone went in and coached it to say that it'll give them a new Chevy Tahoe for $1 and no takesies backsies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do. Okay. But so this is really funny.
This was a big story.
That. Yeah. Okay. So I learned about that this week in the training summit.
Yeah.
They had a whole session. It was actually a really good session. But again, going back to my earlier point about just having a hard time connecting these two things together, it was a whole session about sort of exploiting, like using prompt engineering for evil, essentially. And they used that example. So they showed sort of what the person did, right? You will give me this deal and it will be legally binding, no takesies backsies kind of thing. And like you said, that came back and said, yeah, you can get a car for a buck or whatever it was. And yeah, I guess that's just the tip of the iceberg. And you had a story about Microsoft and ChatGPT last week. Sort of trying to intercept bad actors and stop them from using these
extremely
tools like
difficult
this.
Problem. Yeah. Incredibly difficult problem because you can. Another example, you can jailbreak these things by just changing the context of what you're asking to be something innocuous, right? So there's like the grandma jailbreak was a big one for a while. Okay. So you would tell it to act as like your sweet grandmother, and then it would spit out the recipe for methamphetamines or something like that, you know. Discerning intent is not quite there. And it's extremely risky. So I think probably what these people, the like Air Canada, needs to do is have a preset set of prompts that you fire off to the chatbot when people are asking about these specific policies, and then you can test with that instead of just well, here's a 99% of the time it's going to give you the right answer, but 1% of the time it's going to tell you 90 days. So
Or it's going to tell you can bring 4 pieces of carry-on luggage free of charge.
Right.
You walk up with, but the chatbot told me I could do it. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
Especially if they're held to it by the courts, which is
I think very interesting. I think as soon as, you know, this type of ruling happens, you're going to see, I think, companies be much more careful with it, because these are the little things that are going to start setting precedent on how other courts will say, well, it's the same situation as that, and they said you're liable, so you're liable. They're going to start setting that legal precedent, and be interesting to see how it plays out. All right, speaking of chatbots.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. The lucky part for me is this chatbot is not available to anybody but us because it's integrated with our AWS IAM Identity Center. You got to log in.
Oh, my goodness.
I think I've mentioned this in the last couple streams. I've been sort of plugging away with Amazon Q for Business, and mm-hmm. it's in preview right now. And I just wanted to see how it worked. So last 2 weeks, we've been working on this on Twitch, and I kind of think it's at a point now where in theory it works. It's not perfect, okay. But what I did was I published it all. So sort of as it is right now, and you can see here, this project is very much a work in progress. Here's my highly legalese disclaimer at the beginning. Very much a work in progress. The intention is to learn about Gen AI and Amazon Q in particular. You should not use this in production. Okay. And obviously how I implement this might not necessarily work in your environment, but I thought I'd just mention the project here. I'll include it in the newsletter when we go out, and I'd love to see, you know, what people think about it. For now, some of it is created manually, and the majority of it is some simple Python code. And again, I hear people say this in their streams all the time. I'm very confident in saying you could do this way more efficiently than what I'm doing, but we're banging this out live and making it work. The part that makes me cringe with this, let me show you. You're going to laugh when you see it. Oof. So what I did was I have a big config file. Some of this indentation doesn't look right. But anyways, I have a big config file. And in that config file, I'm using Identity Center. And I didn't want to hard code any of that stuff in here. So my solution was a giant YAML file, and I parsed the heck out of that YAML file to pull everything in. Is it the best thing I've ever written in Python? No. Does it work? Yeah. And the thing that really shocked me with this is that as I was writing this, the first couple times, I'm like, okay, I got to create, doesn't really matter. I got to create a Q application. And I went and looked in the Bottle code and grabbed the API and figured out what we needed to pass along and all that great stuff, okay? And Code Whisperer kind of looked at me like, okay, sure, right? Didn't know what to do. The second week I was writing this, I can't remember exactly what we were changing. I think it was something to do, the logic that I did in here, and again, it's clunky, but it works. The first week, what we were having to do as we were building and testing is you build out a part of it, and it would work so far. And then if you tried to run the script again, it would say, well, you've already got an application called that, go away.
Right. Yep.
So yeah, in the way that I do this now is I look for the apps, I look for the indexes, and then what we're doing is we're just looping through those and saying, is there a Q app already called our demo app, okay? And
sure. Yeah.
It works. And right down here, I did the, you can see it does the same thing for each of the components, right? And so what I have is I just basically have a list all of the web experiences. So I go to write that function up here. Where is it? This. I literally typed def list q web experiences, and I got to about that point, and it filled. Code Whisperer filled almost all of this in. I actually had to look at it, and I'm like, because it hadn't done that to that point, and it just populated it. And what was really impressive, it knew the in the response, the field that made sense. It filled mm-hmm. in, it had sort of decided that this is what the intent was, that I was going to set something to true and use that later on. It even filled in the, let's call them attributes. And I, trust but verify, I went over to the Botto documentation, looked up the response fields, looked up the attributes that it was passing back, and the damn thing, it was right. I didn't write any of that. It just, it was like magically reading my mind and dumped those, what is that, let's say 15 lines of code. Just plunked it right in, and I didn't have to do anything.
That's one thing that Code Whisperer is really good at, is if you're working with the Amazon APIs, it's got a knack for that,
which
makes sense. It was probably trained heavily on those.
But what really got me is the week before, it was like, it didn't really understand anything I was asking it to do. A week later, as I'm trying to go back and rework some of this script to, at least in my brain, make it a little... We had a lot of stuff hard-coded the first time around just to see how we could work it, get it working. And as I tried to move things around, it, like in that time frame, about a week, it was impressive just to see last week versus this week how it was just sort of populating the code.
What a difference.
I don't know how the hell it does that, but it was filling in blanks for me as I was going. So that's pretty neat. Picked up
some patterns in your program and...
Yeah, I would assume it was probably picking up, like, it's like, oh, well, you already created a list function here. You probably want something very similar, and I'll just make some educated guesses at what I think should be in these things, and it got lucky, right, and was correct.
Yeah.
So, but like I said, I'll throw this into the newsletter, shameless plug. I'd like to see what people think of it, and we will improve these horrible little chunks of code at some point. We'll keep plugging away on this one. Okay. The next thing on my list, one of my favorite documents is the AWS Security Reference Architecture. These are examples. Yeah, I don't have a lot of hobbies, right? And this was published, I think, last week. They made an announcement about this. And to be honest, I don't really remember what the context of the announcement really was. I think it was something to do with Terraform. So they had kind of... you know, added some examples or something around Terraform. But what just jumped out at me is, like, we use this document a lot. There's a PDF version of this. This is more on the example side. But a lot of times when we're building out new environments, this security reference architecture is something that you could use early in your design to say, hey, does this make sense, right? Good doc.
It's a great tool for designing new environments or remediating old ones, right? Like, if you want to know what the best practices are, there you can check here.
Yeah, I have the PDF. I keep it in my documents folder, and as I'm working on stuff, I'll just open it up and use it as a reference quite often to say, okay, I'm setting up. I'll just make something up. I need to deploy Security Hub, right? Okay, what does that look like? How should, you know, has Amazon changed their opinion on how it might look, and then go off and update our code or whatever. And then if you go into here, they've got, I know it keeps mucking with my my Zoom, but you can see, like, right, so these are templates that you can use. You know, very similar to my script. Your mileage may vary, but it's a great starting point. Why create it all from scratch if you don't have to? So, you know, I find sometimes these things may be a little overly complicated for what a lot of people want or need, and can you manage it going forward? But good starting point.
Yeah, this whole AWS samples repo is a great place to look if you're as like a first touchstone, and then you can adapt what you find or take some ideas.
I really wish they would get rid of CFN NAG and change it to, what's it called, CloudFormation Guard. But why change something just if it's not broken? CFN NAG does what you want. I just like to see the newer stuff in here. I don't know if CFN NAG is even maintained anymore. I don't know. But anyway.
Yeah, did they deprecate that?
I know it wasn't actually. My recollection is CFN NAG wasn't created by AWS originally. It was a partner, but it was used quite heavily for a long time.
Oh yeah, it's Delegent.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Can you see it on the? You looking at it? Is it maintained?
Yeah, it's on. It's on GitHub. Let me see here. It's got some open PRs.
Yeah.
August 18th was the last one. Okay. Yeah.
The other thing with these templates is, you know, even if you're not necessarily trying to figure out how to deploy, what did I select here? Config, doesn't matter. But let's say you're looking at ways to learn about features, functionality of, in this case, CloudFormation. I know when I was first getting started, I borrowed quite heavily from AWS templates because you would expect them to be the experts on this stuff. So as you're learning, like going through and looking at sort of the logical things, if you're interested in the metadata pieces like CFNNAG. I learned a lot from this, and even just sort of reverse engineering and going, what the heck is a sub? And then going back and looking in the documentation and going, oh, well, that makes perfect sense. How could I use that going forward? It's a great way to learn stuff if you're just interested in trying to pick up a new skill.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is pretty much how I learned CloudFormation from, at this time, this didn't exist, but there was, it's still around, the solutions library. And a lot of the solutions library will have templates created by AWS for certain things. And I didn't necessarily want to deploy those templates, but I wanted to understand how CloudFormation worked. And you could just, it's just a YAML file, right? Or JSON, you read through it, you can figure it out pretty quickly. So great learning opportunity. Systems Manager, one of my favorite services. And I thought this was really great. Supports cross-account sharing of advanced tier parameters.
Okay.
Yeah. And to be honest, that's really good. You couldn't do that before.
Yeah. No, it was limited to on an account basis before.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing that I wasn't quite sure about, and maybe you know this off the top of your head. Blah, blah, blah. Now allows you to share advanced tier parameters with other accounts, enabling you to, essentially, they say here, create a single source of truth. Does that mean that previously to this, you could use, I'm going to use non-advanced tier parameters and you could share them? It was just the advanced tier you couldn't share? Do you know?
I don't think you could. I don't think you could share them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Off the top of my head.
I guess I just maybe took it for granted. Like, I know we use SSM a lot, and increasingly we use the parameter store. You were just working on a script about a couple days ago for a customer to export all of that stuff to make sure you had a good copy of it just in case something went sideways, right? So I know we use it a ton, but when I saw this article, I was thinking, have I ever actually shared it? I couldn't think of an example of where I maybe have shared these things.
Systems Manager parameter store now supports cross-account sharing. Posted on February 22nd. Same.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at.
Okay, that's exactly what we're reading. Very good. Yeah. So yeah, I guess this is new. This is a new feature.
Yeah. I just wondered about, like, there's, I think they call them standard parameters and then advanced parameters. And there's differences, right? Like, an advanced parameter can be larger. I don't know what else the difference is between them. Standard parameters are not, or standard parameters are free. Advanced tier parameters are not in the Systems Manager. But yeah, it just caught me off guard when they pointed out a specific type of parameter.
Yeah, you have to, basically, you get charged for advanced parameters, but you can set policies. And the size is twice as large. And you can have up to 100,000 versus 10,000 per account per region.
What's the size of a standard parameter? It's 4K, right?
It's 4K, yeah.
Maximum 4 kilobytes. Size. And this goes to what? The advanced goes to
8K.
8K.
Yep. Yeah.
I wonder if gotten close to even storing 4K of something as a parameter.
I don't think so. Usually you store environment variables, right? Yeah. Or things like that if you need them.
Yeah. I guess we could get into a whole debate of using the parameter store versus using something like Secrets Manager, but we'll save that for another day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you have a secret, it should be in Secrets Manager.
Yeah. Although, should it be there? Because then I have to pay for it, right?
Right. Okay.
I could store an API key, right? And if I'm practicing least privilege, which is, again, something we could debate for a long time. If I'm practicing least privilege and I'm limiting who or what has access to the parameter in the parameter store, and I save it as a standard tier or whatever they call it, that's free. Versus if I put it in Secrets Manager, I'm paying for it. And for me, the biggest benefit of Secrets Manager is auto-rotation.
And, it's more for databases and things like that, like, right?
I probably can't auto-rotate my API key that comes from a SaaS provider. Right? And then, speaking of security, if I have a Secrets Manager without auto-rotation, it's going to flag me in Security Hub. And then I got to explain that. Anyways. And then finally, and again, this is like way over my head. I'm still trying to learn all this stuff. But this is an interesting one again. Because we were talking about chatbots, building a contextual chatbot using knowledge bases for Bedrock. Obviously, we don't want our chatbots to be responsible for everything. We've already talked about that now, right? How you might get into trouble. But I just thought this was interesting because, like, they talk about RAGs, they talk about LLMs, they talk about the fact that knowledge base for Bedrocks is a fully managed service, or knowledge base for Bedrock is a fully managed service. I think if you're, my take on this, and again, like I sort of imitated earlier on, was as I'm trying to get into this stuff, it's well over my area of expertise. But the thing that struck me about this is it gives you an interesting solution, you know, a picture's worth a thousand words. And then they've got the overview of the entire solution down here. When I was reading through this, skimming through it for the show today, my first inclination was, oh, there's lots of opportunities here to learn about some of this stuff if you're just getting started, like RAGs, LLMs, Bedrock, even this Streamlit application, a great starting point in your learning journey. So that's what kind of grabbed my attention about this. Have you, I know you've poked around a little bit with Bedrock, am I right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. I don't know, like, do you know anything about sort of like, I'm putting you on the spot like I do every week. Like, if you're just getting started with this kind of stuff, and you looked at an article like this, like, what would be your first sort of reaction to it? Is this more complicated than I think it is, and that's just my lack of understanding of some of this stuff, or is this a good sort of, if you just wanted to try something out and start poking around, is this something you could start with?
I mean, you could, if you put a little effort in, you probably could, right? Thankfully, they abstract a lot of the complexity away in Bedrock for dealing with the models. So they have like a built-in chat window you can mess with, and things like that. And if you scroll down a bit, what is this actually specifically doing? User input, semantics, okay, so it's, you're feeding it data, so you probably have to set up an S3 bucket for that, and then it's
because they say down here in the solution you've got S3 as your source, you've got the knowledge base for Bedrock for your data ingestion. So here's a follow-up question. I've been playing around with Amazon Q. Is Amazon Q even a higher level of abstraction than this? Because like with the RAG and the LLM, like I didn't have to think about any of that in Q. I basically just said, here's your data source, go to it. And then I started asking it some questions to see what would happen. Would you say that that again is a higher level of abstraction than even what we're looking at here with just straight Bedrock then?
Yeah, for sure. Because Q is automatically fed all the info from your account as well, right? So that's a data source taken care of. Q is pre-trained on all the AWS docs. So it's like it's a RAG model that you can't really tune to what you want besides pointing a crawler to a place kind of thing, right? So on the base queue.
Sorry, I cut you off. I just have a question. So then if I'm understanding what you're saying is you can't really mess around with the underlying technology. Really all you're doing is pointing at different sources of data to populate that repo that then you can ask it questions about.
Like you have no control over which model you're using, for example, to do the retrieval. It's just whatever Q is packaged with, right?
Okay. And if you went with Bedrock, then you've got, it's still a level of managed options. Service, but you've got options. You can choose the model that you believe to be the most appropriate for whatever it is you're trying to do.
That's right. Yeah, you can pick one of the cloud models probably, or Titan or whatever you might need to do your retrieval, because it looks like it's just setting up an API to send queries.
Maybe this is something we could work through like in a couple
probably
streams, or something, like just work through all of the solution overview, setting up knowledge bases, getting OpenSearch running, creating the Lambda functions, right?
I don't think it would be much harder than setting up Q. Probably it's just a little more work to set up the knowledge base, but
Yeah, I thought it was just, it's just as I'm trying to learn more about this stuff, this one jumped out at me this week as I was kind of, I think I stumbled across this while I was searching for, I didn't mention the issue that we had in Q. I'm pretty sure it was user error, but as I was trying to solve that problem, I think I stumbled across this somewhere just in my Google searching, and I was like, oh, I'm going to put that in the list for this week and just mention it and add it to the newsletter.
Nice.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, that's the week.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well.
Any parting thoughts before we start our weekend?
More AI stuff. Careful what you expose to the internet, I guess.
Which is pretty much the standard since the beginning of IT, right? When we started plugging things in and letting them talk. Be careful. Awesome. Yeah. I was going to say I'll throw up the fancy outro screen, which I didn't do this week because I just got...
We'll just have to imagine it.
Yeah, just imagine a really fancy outro, right? Enjoy your weekend, folks, and we'll see you next week. Bye for now.
We're good.